Welcome in. This is the Celtics Talk Podcast. I am Abby Chin, joined by A. Sherrod Blakely.
What's going on, Abigail?
Hello. We gave Kyle the day off to rest and recuperate after that double overtime loss.
Oh, the old man needs a little rest. That definitely, you know, tapped him out.
And I'm happy to pinch hit.
Absolutely. Danny Amendola stepped in, and that kind of worked out. That kind of worked out well for him. Just saying, Drapes, how you doing out there? Just relax, big fella. Just relax, big fella. We got this.
We are coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee is just 99 cents any size. That's 99 good reasons to switch. All right, Shroud, let's talk about these Boston Celtics, or what's left of them. So many injuries right now. Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving, and Gordon Hayward. Just to name a few, which is the most concerning for you?
Kyrie.
Really? It's, what about Marcus Smart?
Kyrie. But, well, here's the thing. If you have Marcus Smart, you're going to be a very good team, obviously. And if you don't have him, you're going to struggle, but you can kind of cut and paste your way to kind of get into the playoffs and maybe get past the first round. If you don't have Kyrie Irving, you're not going anywhere. You're going to get to the postseason, and, you know, don't get too comfortable because you're not going to be there very long. He is that significant, that important to this team. But I will say this,
I don't disagree with you on that. I am concerned about the long term for this season.
Okay.
I think that Kyrie can battle whatever is going on in that knee, if it's tendonitis, if it is going to require a surgery down the road, as Danny Ainge mentioned. I think that it's something that he can deal with this season until this summer. Whereas the Marcus Smart thing, we really don't know. And I feel like that if Marcus Smart is out for the rest of the season, I think that completely changes their trajectory through the playoffs.
It does. I mean, because Marcus is a significant part of what they do. And we've seen a different kind of Marcus Smart post All-Star / punching a pitcher frame.
Yes.
He's been really good. His 3-point shooting doesn't make me cringe nearly as much as it used to. His defense has still been elite, and most significantly, he wins. He helps this team win. He impacts winning, which is a great thing to see. And when you don't have that, someone has to step up. But the thing that always stood out to me about Marcus from the moment he became a Celtic was he had a presence about him to be a difference maker, even when the numbers don't suggest that, even when his play, his shooting doesn't suggest that. I mean, he's one of the few guys in the league that can go 2-for-8 and be the most important player on the floor.
Yeah.
Those guys just don't come around every day. And I think the Celtics are going to benefit long-term if Marcus is able to come back. And I think they're going to be in a very good position to sign him back because there has been a market correction, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
across
a good
the league.
Across the league. I mean, you're not going to get a guy coming off your bench making $17 million and some change a la
Evan Turner.
Yes. That's not
who we love.
Oh, love Evan Turner, but I'm not $17 million in love with Evan Turner like Portland was. And I think there's about 25, 26, maybe 27 teams who kind of agree with me on that.
Yeah, he became a free agent in the right summer.
It's all about timing.
Yes.
I mean, it is all about timing. And Marcus Smart, unfortunately for him, but fortunately for the Celtics, his timing is such that he's going to wind up making less money, but I think he's going to be in a better situation because if he is true to what he says, he's about winning, he's not going to find a better situation than the one in Boston. There are very few guys who can have a young core that they're part of and not necessarily have to be the face of that group.
Have legitimate championship aspirations.
Absolutely, because you look around the East. I mean, Toronto is having a great season. They're certainly in the mix. Cleveland is on a downslide. Indiana is on a come up, but they're not quite there yet, I don't believe. Philadelphia, this is having a breakout season. But there really isn't a team that, when you look in the East, that has made the progress to be in the title contention situation, and yet are still very young. I mean, the Celtics, fifth youngest team in the NBA. You look at the people and the teams that they're in conversations with, teams like Houston, teams like Golden State. Those teams are built to win a championship now. As much as we talk about, you know, possibly not having Marcus Smart as a setback, and obviously not having Gordon Hayward has been a setback, this team wasn't built to win a title this year.
No.
They weren't. This team was supposed to make another step in that direction, maybe getting back to the conference finals, maybe even getting to the finals. But this team was not built with the purpose of winning a title right this minute. And yet, there they are in the hunt. And so that's why I'm not as disturbed about some of the injuries, because really – I look at that kind of as a market correction, if you will. That they're basically if they get to the conference finals and they don't win it there, and you look at all the injuries that they've had to deal with.
Oh yeah,
that's kind of. I mean, you're still playing with house money at that point, because then you start.
No
question. Right. I had a conversation with Austin Ainge actually recently about this, and we talked about their roster and how they've got so many guys that are they still have under contract for next year. And as young as you are now, and a lot of those young guys are playing now. And so it's great from the standpoint of you're developing your team, mm-hmm. and your team is going to be good for a long time. But the downside is when you think about adding youth to that team through the draft, you look around and it's like, where the hell is guy going to play?
My concern with the injuries right now, I would say, is that if Marcus Smart is done for the season, like you said, everything is house money. They were not supposed to win a championship right. this season, particularly after Gordon Hayward went right. down. So shut down Kyrie. Give that knee a rest and let's see what happens. Let the chips fall where they may. But so that's the question, Trotton. You brought up the Eastern Conference. Does it really matter? The Celtics slotted into this number two spot right now as things are situated. It means they would avoid Cleveland mm-hmm. in that second round. And so I feel like they're in the best position possible for them now.
Yeah.
What are the goals we head into the postseason?
I think the goals for them is just to get as deep as you can and stay in the playoffs as long as you can. At this point, it really doesn't matter whether you get to the conference finals, NBA finals. Just stay in as long as you're physically capable of staying in the postseason. But the one thing that is going to have to happen for them, and you've seen this happen, you go back and you look at, I believe it was 2010, when they got to the NBA finals and Chicago got knocked out in the first round because Derrick Rose got hurt. Mm-hmm. You're going to need some unplanned breaks to go your way in order to really maximize the opportunity to really make a deep and meaningful playoff run. And I think the Celtics, you know, when you look at all the injuries that they've had, would anyone be surprised if the Celtics get a bunch of breaks that they have nothing to do with in the playoffs, when you look at all the crap that they've had to endure and how they've been able to overcome that and how they've been able to play through that, and they didn't make any excuses, and you know they took their lumps, but they dished them out as well. So I would not be shocked if this team finds a way, even with all the injuries, even with Marcus Smart potentially being out for the season, it would not shock me if we're at the conference finals, game six in Boston, with a chance to close it out against the Toronto Raptors. Because the other thing about the Celtics is this.
Hold on. Can I just tell you, that mm-hmm. was my basketball gods conspiracy theory, is that the Celtics are not supposed to be here.
Are real, y'all.
Right. They took Gordon Hayward away game one, and they said, now deal with it. And the Celtics have done too much. They've right. done too well. So the basketball gods are saying, no, you're not supposed to be here. Yeah. We're going to make it tougher.
Yeah, I mean, they've had so many games that just leave you scratching your head. Like, how did they do that? I mean, Indiana has the ball. All they got to do is hold on to it in Indiana. And there is Terry Rozier
streaking, you know, looking, across
yeah,
the
floor. I mean, looking like Deion Sanders, just breaking up coverage, going in for a layup. And then you're down 26 to Houston. One of the best teams in the league.
Yes.
And you find a way to come. You don't just get back in the game. You win.
That Marcus Smart draws two offensive foul charges.
You're not going to find another game in the NBA played this season, and maybe ever, where a superstar, top five player, has two offensive fouls called against him on
with the game on the line.
With the game on the line against a guy who, I mean, no disrespect to Marcus Smart, but he's a solid but not spectacular NBA player.
And has not gotten that respect from the refs.
We're not talking about, you know, LeBron James getting a call against Kevin Durant. We're not talking about James Harden, you know, getting a call against Kawhi Leonard. We're talking about Marcus Smart and James Harden. So the Celtics, I feel good about their chances once we get to the postseason, and I feel good not just because of where they'll be, but because I know that they have – I think the basketball guys are going to do them a solid, and they're a great road team. And when I think about the playoffs, at some point you're going to have to win in the other team's building, and that's why the Toronto Raptors, I cannot co-sign on them as being the team to beat, because they struggle on the road.
All right, let's continue this conversation about the Eastern Conference. Sherrod, you caught up with Steve Kyler of Basketball Insiders to talk about that, and a little Isaiah Thomas slander.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Here we are welcoming in Steve Kyler of Basketball Insiders. Steve, how you doing, my friend?
I am well. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, wonderful. I'm in good health. Unfortunately, I cannot say the same for the club that I cover, the Boston Celtics. Steve, you've been around the game for a while, man. I mean, have you seen anything quite like what's happening in Boston as far as key players going down with injuries this late in the season?
Yeah, look over at the Golden State Warriors. They're going through two. It's normally you see it, right? You know, coaches say it. We hear it all the time from coaches. Injuries are part of the game. It's the reason you carry 14 guys. It's the reason you'll pay your backup point guard $8 million. You know, all of these things. You just hope that it never gets to this point. But this is kind of why it gets dangerous to say, oh, it's going to be this team in the finals. Because after 82 games, who knows who the best team left standing is going to be? And I think that's the real challenge, especially when you look at kind of how the NBA is playing out. Because the two healthiest teams right now might be the Houston Rockets and the Toronto Raptors. I don't think anybody would have pegged them as the teams that come out of 82 games standing upright.
Right, and it's crazy. I mean, you mentioned those two teams. They have the best records in their respective conferences. Which has been the biggest surprise to you, Toronto or Houston, as far as having the better record in their respective conference?
Well, I think Toronto. I mean, look, we knew Houston was good. They were this good last year. They got better in getting Chris Paul. They took some lumps in the playoffs, and you always get better when you do that. But Toronto, I think, was a little more surprising because this group in Toronto had been together, and there was more talk of maybe it was time to blow it up than to keep it together. But then you see continuity wins out, and continuity usually wins out. And the fact that they've evolved as a basketball team, I think, is more telling. You know, they play what we'll call the modern style of pace and space basketball. They're shooting more threes. They have guys that can shoot threes. DeMar DeRozan is expanded his game, and it's not just two guys. So I think those were all things we didn't know when we came into this. I mean, I don't think anybody saw Fred VanVleet becoming this guy, or Pascal Siakam becoming this guy, or even Jakob Poeltl becoming this guy. And they've all three been huge for what Toronto is doing. And it's given them kind of a 1-2 punch from starter to bench that really doesn't let up in intensity on either side. So to me, that was the more unexpected, because I didn't see Toronto the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned DeRozan and just what he's done. I mean, it seems, and tell me if I'm out in left field in this, but it seems there are more legitimate MVP candidates in that discussion this year than usual. I mean, am I crazy to think that?
Well, we had a pretty deep class last year, but I think we are seeing, you know, those of us that have covered the game for a while, it's a golden era of star basketball. Normally, there are three, maybe four guys. The fourth guy is kind of an outlier. Nobody's noticed. And we all like him because he played well. You know, legitimately, there were eight guys last year. I mean, if you put Isaiah Thomas in that discussion, which I think you needed to, there were eight guys last year. I think we've got legitimately seven or eight this year. Damian Lillard has come on since, you know, All-Star and really put his stamp on an MVP season. You know, Anthony Davis has just been incredible since DeMarcus Cousins went down. DeMar DeRozan's been incredible. So, you know, these just aren't names you're used to talking about in terms of MVP, especially when you think about, you know, LeBron and the fact that he's going to live at the top of any board, and James Harden's having another epic season. The fact that you've got so many candidates, I think, is what's made the NBA so popular.
Yeah, and just to bring it back home to Boston a little bit, and we talked earlier about Toronto and just, you know, how awesome a season they're having. I mean, let's just assume that the Celtics are relatively healthy, where you've got a Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Jaylen Brown, those guys are ready to go, and we're in the conference finals. Who's going to win that if it's them in Toronto?
Yeah, that's a good one. And again, as much as I've seen growth and improvement out of Toronto, I think we've seen this for 3 years when the words playoff are stenciled on the floor, Kyle Lowry forgets how to shoot the basketball. And I think they've got to prove that they're ready to win something, where I think we've seen that this Boston Celtics team, even these young guys last year, were really scrappy. I like Brad Stevens' style of play in the postseason. I like the fact that the coaching staff just has this huge track record of being able to game plan matchup to matchup and game to game in such an interesting way. And I haven't seen that from Toronto. So to me, I kind of give the edge to the Boston Celtics. And I also point out, think about you know, we're talking about the conference finals. Conference finals end of May. So you're talking about 2 months. So there's a lot of time for the Boston Celtics to get right physically.
Yeah, that, I agree. And the one team that we haven't said a word about, which whenever you get this to this point in the year, they're always the one team we always talk about, and that's the Cleveland Cavaliers. What do you see in that team, and do you think they can get it right in time to be one of the last teams standing?
Yeah, that's a huge question. I always kind of go back to this. I mean, think about that first, you know, LeBron James, you know, championship, you know, finals run in Cleveland. There was a bunch of dudes you didn't know, you didn't think could be in. LeBron can will you there. He's turned second-tier guys into big-money players in this league in the postseason year after year after year. So I want to believe that that's the case this year, that they're going to be that team. And when LeBron doesn't have to play back-to-backs and it can just be how good is he really. But then I also look at it and say, this is probably the worst team he's been on as a pro, and for a whole lot of reasons. And it's not just the young guys. It's J.R. Smith isn't that guy. Tristan Thompson's been hurt. We don't know what Kevin Love's going to look like when he comes back. There are just so many questions. And, you know, LeBron's not a younger guy. He's getting older. You know, does he still have that magic left? I like this team a whole lot better than the team that was on the floor before the trade deadline. I think the younger legs matter. I think these guys are better defensively than anything they had on the roster prior to the trade deadline. But they haven't been there. And when you're talking about needing big minutes from Jordan Clarkson, big minutes from Larry Nance Jr., big minutes from George Hill, the one guy who really has some experience in all of this, you know, what are they really going to be? And I don't think I know the answer to that enough to say, oh, sure, the Cavs are going to be the Cavs once the postseason rolls around.
Yeah. When you mentioned that Cavs roster, and obviously they shook things up by their hand was forced when they had to trade Kyrie Irving. And then after they traded him, they shifted things up again with several players being shipped out at the trade deadline, among them being Isaiah Thomas, who he looks like Boston Celtics Isaiah Thomas for the Lakers. Do you think they may have pulled the trigger a little too soon and maybe didn't give him enough time to kind of get his legs back under him? Because he's been a different kind of player ever since he left Cleveland.
Yeah, but that's not a unique thing, too. I mean, I think Kyrie Irving looks like a different player since he's out from under LeBron's shadow. And I think it's easy from afar, or if you don't really pay attention, to understand how difficult it is to play with LeBron James. He's not one of these guys that instantly makes the game easier, especially if you're a ball-dominating player or somebody who really needs a large volume of touches. And I don't think that it's a big surprise that the guys that have really blossomed around him are those complementary supporting players. And you've covered IT. You know he needs the ball.
Gotta have it.
He wants the ball. He needs the ball. And they were never going to create enough touches in that offense for all the things LeBron needs, all the things IT needs, because we've seen this. When he's getting, you know, 8 to 10 touches in a game, he's not a factor. He needs to be a high-volume, high-touch guy for him to be IT. And I think the situation with the Lakers is perfect. They're not playing for a draft pick. They want some excitement. They want to win some games so these young guys know why they need to get into the offseason. They want to believe in the future. And Isaiah's been a spark for them. And I also think that, you know, the pressure. There's no pressure with the Lakers situation right now. Maybe, you know, contract pressure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there was everyday fishbowl, is this the reason LeBron's going to leave the franchise pressure? And that's not something you want to deal with when you're in a contract year. And I think his style of play certainly rubbed a lot of people wrong with the Cleveland Cavalier organization, certainly in that locker room. So, you know, he gets out of the pressure. He gets a chance to go be him in a situation that allows him to be him. And I don't think it's surprising he's putting up the kind of numbers we're used to, because this is the situation he ultimately needed. Playing second fiddle to LeBron was never going to be something that worked in the long term.
Yeah. And, I mean, what he's doing in L.A., I mean, he certainly has made his presence felt coming off that bench, giving him significant offense, some tough love, it looks like, with him and Julius Randle having some words on the bench. But that team
– And to a good point, though, there, Sherrod, is that wasn't going to work in Cleveland.
Right.
You know, he's not giving tough love to LeBron. You try to play the tough love card.
I would love to see him do that, try that, though. I really would. That'd be good.
Yeah. you know, at the end there, it was tough. You know, they weren't talking to each other. It wasn't a healthy situation. So the fact that he's got young guys that appreciate who he is, appreciate what he does, and will allow themselves to be led that way, I think says volumes about why they made that decision. And then ultimately, if this thing doesn't work out for them in the offseason in terms of getting a LeBron or getting a Paul George, they always have the option of keeping IT around, even if it's on a less year deal. You know, you can throw a bunch of money at him and just keep doing what you're doing. And I think the tryout period was good for everybody.
Yeah. And speaking of leadership, you look around the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference as well. There's a huge logjam, it seems, between basically the number 3 through like 8, 9, 10 teams. In the Eastern Conference, who's the one team that's in that logjam that you'd be most concerned about playing?
The Indiana Pacers. I love this Indiana Pacer team. You know, I was one of the few people when they made that Paul George trade. Look, in every situation, you want Paul George if you can have him. But if you have to trade him, this was what you wanted. You wanted young guys that had something to prove, that fit into a team concept. And they've been way better than I expected. I mean, I had Victor Oladipo in Orlando, and you know, I knew how good Victor could be. I didn't even think he'd be this good. So it's been impressive. And the fact that they've been able to continue to add pieces, continue to develop, I think they're scratching the surface of how good they're ultimately going to be. But look, if you don't come in ready to play in Indiana, or you don't give Victor Oladipo some respect, they will make you pay. And they're the team that could really upset the dance if somebody comes in banged up a little bit, or somebody comes in, you know, not quite focused on the task in hand. We've seen that sometimes. Or in the first round, or even the second round, you don't take the opponent in front of you seriously, and it becomes a 7-game series when it wasn't supposed to be. Indiana could absolutely be that team.
Yeah, no doubt about that. They're having a great season. Victor Oladipo has elevated his play to obvious all-star level. Steve Kuyler, Basketball Insiders, thank you so much for your time, my friend, and we will do it again.
Anytime.
All right, take care, my friend.
Sherrod, I'm not sure I agree with Steve there. Indiana, what do you think about that?
You know what? The Pacers, I tell you what, they're a team that is a year away from being scary. I think this year they might make a team or two nervous, but I just don't think they're quite ready to take that step and be a team that can get to the second round of the conference finals just yet. But I'll tell you what, though, Victor Oladipo is real.
Legit.
He is legitimate all-star. I think he's going to be in the conversation for several years. At some point, I think he's going to elevate his status to where he's in the MVP conversation. That year is not now. May not be next year, but make no mistake about it, the Pacers are coming.
And I think something that you hadn't heard until this season was just how hard of a worker he is and how much he works on his game and wants to be better. And so I agree with you. I think he's someone that the Celtics will have to contend with going down the road, but I don't think this will be the year
for
the Pacers. All right, that's what Steve thinks. Sherrod, well done. Now let's catch up with Scal talking to Coach Stevens about all of these injuries for the Celtics.
All right, Coach, you got a ton of injuries, and first of all, I'm really sorry about all that, but this is the nature of the beast. This is the nature of the NBA. So how do you move forward from this? Is it just next man up mentality, and you just survive in advance that you're going through?
Yeah, you go into every game, you try to put your best foot forward, put your best lineup out there of the guys that are available, and try to play as well as you can. Obviously, each game throws you a different curveball, and we've been thrown quite a few this year, but you know, our guys, I think, appreciate the opportunity to step up when called upon, especially the guys that don't play as much. I mean, this is their time, and I think that's a big deal.
So so many times you look at two or three player combinations. How am I going to match up with this team? How are they going to match up with us? So with maybe some combinations you haven't seen before, is it sort of like try it and see what happens? Or do you have an idea of what's going to happen when you go in there?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. Okay. I mean, I think you know, we went through a really unique period earlier this year where we didn't have Marcus, Shane, or Kyrie. And, you know, Terry was our only point guard basically left on the roster. And so Terry played, but when Terry went out, we played Al at the point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that you ever really thought you were going to do. You knew he could bring it up if you need to. But, you know, things like that happen. And you know, this time, you know, knock on wood right now, we're a little bit better off with Terry and Shane available. But at the same time, you know, we've got a lot of other guys out.
with Al being out, did that put like a tremendous amount of pressure on a guy like Terry?
I think it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on everybody, but I think that that's a good thing. And, you know, again, you know, Ab Nader, Gershon Yabusele, Shemi Ojale, those guys have all played at times, and Shemi more than the other two, but they're all going to have to play an increased role.
You have to put, not more pressure, but run more plays for a guy like Tatum. Does Tatum have to, like, change his mindset from when the game come to him to initiate?
There's no question that, you know, Terry, Morris, Tatum, probably Monroe, all get increased opportunities from the standpoint of touches and where you want them to get it. We've put in a couple of new things even in shoot around today where, you know, we can go to all those guys. And, you know, it may be something that we don't use beyond this week. Just kind of depends on when we get healthy.
Now, Danny Ainge said that he's ready to sign a 10-day. But my question is more, could we know he's not ready to sign a 10-day?
And we don't have a roster spot.
Yeah, I don't think he can sign a 10-second. But if like in the NHL, sometimes like a coach is like a backup goalie on an emergency situation. Someone in your organization, not in your G League, and a coach in your G League could qualify. If you had to suit up one guy, who would
what position do I need?
Whatever you need today.
It's a good question. You know, we do have some pretty good play. We have, ironically, one of our best players on our coaching staff, Tony Dobbins, is hurt.
Yeah.
So he's coming off of a broken foot. So, you know, Jerome or Walt probably going to have to dust off those shoes.
What about our boy Barlow? Back in it.
Yeah, Barlow would be good for a laugh.
The problem with Barlow is actually he can keep
belongs. Barlow played point guard for me at Butler, and I always look at, in fact, he was coaching because Brandon Bailey got tossed from a game this year and Barlow took over in the middle of the game. So Barlow was the head coach on one side, and on the other side was another kid I coached at Butler, Ron Norred. So they were battling back and forth, and I told them both. I walked over to Kyrie and said, thank God I'm coaching you now. All my former point guards are coaching at 27.
Kind of a slight upgrade.
That's right.
See, even coaches get hurt around here, man. All right, thanks, Coach.
Man, Coach Stevens.
I know.
Burns all over the place. Wow, I did not see
Coach
that coming,
with
Sherrod.
Hot taste.
I know.
Wow.
Trashing his own players.
Those were not dad jokes. He
he had some real talk.
This was good. That was really good. I like to see that side of Brad, though.
I know. We don't get to see it very often.
No, but he's going at players. He's patting Kyrie on the shoulder. He's picking up texts like Tic Tacs. Man, I like this Brad Stevens guy. I like him.
We'll see what this Brad Stevens does in the postseason. That'll do it for this Celtics Talk podcast. Sherrod, well done. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcasting apps. And for Kyle, I'm Abby. We did not miss you. Sherrod?
No, we did not. Just kidding, buddy.
But we hope you are getting better wherever you are, Kyle.
We are out!